When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Curtains up on the National Hockey League and training camps all across North America. A lot of different storylines from guys in camp to a couple of injuries that we weren't too sure about. Darren Millard along with John Shannon. What grabbed your attention right out of the gate?
Nothing. I hate training camp. I do. I just hate it. I hate rookie camp.
I love it.
I know you do. I know. But you think you're going to play.
No, I'm watching. We've got three sessions a day going. We play on Sunday. There's lots of different storylines. And that's just with Vegas. Never mind a guy's not in camp in Anaheim and the manager's not too pleased about it. The guy's not in camp in New Jersey and the manager's okay with it. Like how they interpret a couple of different things. Yeah. And then the players that all have contracts that can be signed that haven't been signed and they're all talking.
But those things didn't need camp to become stories anyway. So let's face it. I mean, Mason McTavish now skating with the Ottawa 67s is a fascinating story. And you're right, Pat Verbeek's not very happy about it. So, and you're right, Tom Fitzgerald is a lot more patient about Luke Hughes. Somehow, some way, I wonder really why that is. I mean, is it the fact that brother Jack is still in camp and got to keep the family happy? It's a fascination for me.
Well, one team has a new coaching staff, right? And they're looking for a real surge in Anaheim. And that's where Verbeek's
Well, I expect from. That there will be a surge. I think Joel Quenneville will do an amazing job there. I really do. I think that the lessons he's learned and the time away, and then he's probably been able to hone his skill as a head coach. And then, you know, the big story really is, I don't want to call him the big four, but when you think that, you know, Connor McDavid, everybody expected him to sign, some of us didn't. Kirill Kaprizov has not signed. Jack Eichel has not signed. Kyle Connor has not signed. And for some reason, there's a raison d'etre in the NHL that you're supposed to sign your big guys before their last year of their contract, and that has not happened for, let's face it, guys with high profiles.
Do you have a gut feeling on which of those four would be the first to sign? Well, we've got Mark Chipman coming up, and he's watching Kyle Connor. We'll be curious to see what he says about those negotiations.
But I think the two Americans will sign simultaneously. I think the two Americans will sign first. So Jack Eichel and Kyle Connor will sign because I truly believe both sides have made it very well known that they're very happy where they are. And so from that perspective, what we're talking about now is, you know, negotiation on term, negotiation on that final 50 cents, trying to fit it into a budget. And I expect that both Eichel and Connor will be signed before the other two.
And do you think they all then come to an agreement? Like one goes, they all go?
No, I don't. I don't think there's a domino effect of, okay, one of them's done. We have the others now that are going to feel the pressure or are going to be relieved that they can sign. I think that we're learning slowly what Connor McDavid wants and what Kirill Kaprizov wants. And both of them are committed to their teams for this season, and we'll just have to wait and see.
So how about this one? Anze Kopitar says he's retiring, leaving the NHL after 20 years.
Yeah.
Ken Holland is the general manager in LA, used to be the guy running the Edmonton Oilers.
Yes.
Connor McDavid is up after this year. Are you seeing what I'm laying down here?
Are you trying to connect dots?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is a bit of a precedent there. You know, a great Oiler went to Los Angeles once.
You're right.
So, but I think you're making too much out of it too soon. I really do. I think you're making too much out of it too soon at this point. I still believe Connor McDavid will find a way, at least in the short term, to win in Edmonton. And that is what he's always said he wants to do, is win in Edmonton.
We'll follow it with great interest. And I've got my little thing that I want to toss out at you. And we'll do it after, because Mark Chipman's joined the waiting room. And we'll get to the Winnipeg Jets governor. Well,
there's a lot of guys from Manitoba on this show. How does this work?
Well, if you're going to be influential, you got to pass through Portage, Maine. That's basically how it works.
Well, now that you can walk above ground at Portage, Maine again, life is good. Now I can be able to get blown off my feet.
Funny, they built that underpass to keep you warm, and so you didn't have to do it in the middle of winter. And then now we're back up, back on top.
That's okay.
Dealing with Mother Nature, and we'll deal with the guy that guides the Winnipeg Jets, Mark Chipman. A lot to get to there. The defending and reigning President's Trophy winners of the National Hockey League joins us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. This is my favorite day. Get to catch up with the Manitoba. This is awesome. John, don't take offense, but Mark and I are just going to spend half an hour reminiscing about the good old days of growing up in Manitoba.
Well, no, are you guys going to talk about the halfway tree or whatever it's called?
Yeah, the halfway tree between Brandon and Winnipeg. Mark knows all about that.
Hold on, but is the halfway tree halfway?
It's slightly tilted towards one side.
In other words, the answer is no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Darren.
That wasn't very enthusiastic.
No, it's good to see you. Hey,
you're launching camp here. What are a couple of top storylines for you from where you sit on the Winnipeg Jets?
Oh, geez. Well, I think probably level of expectations, right? And they've been high the last few years. I think we've won 154 games in the last 3 years. I think this is a good group, right? I think that's the most amount of regular season wins in the league over the past three seasons. So expectations are high for this group. It's a very mature group that we've drafted and been able to keep together. So I think the expectations that they have of themselves are very high. That's kind of one of the vibes I'm picking up on. So, that would be one. Number two, I mean, we got some new faces here, veteran faces in Tanner and Gus Nyquist and obviously Jonathan and Koepke kid who played in Boston last year. But it's pretty much, I mean, other than that, it's the same group. The other thing I would say is there's some really good young players that are, you know, have been pressing to make this team. And it'll be really interesting to see how that goes throughout camp, because there's a cohort of kids that are close. That would be my take on things.
What does it mean to have Jonathan Toews on this roster?
Well, first of all, I'm really happy for him that I'm thrilled that he's been able to find his way back into the game and finish his career on his terms and not on, you know, on sort of medical terms. So I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. And secondly, I think, you know, I, obviously he brings a level of leadership and intangibles and all those kinds of things that are invaluable. If you're pushing towards the summit, so to speak, like we have been, I think he brings something that is invaluable. And I think it's kind of belief is, you know, as he explains it to me, he really believes in this team. Like, I think there was a reason he chose us. And so, yeah, I would say that's what he brings.
That was always a cool idea, Jonathan Toews playing for the Winnipeg Jets.
It was a pipe dream for years.
But yeah. did you ever think it was realistic that it would happen, or was it just a cool idea?
I don't know that I really thought about it. I mused about it with Chevy, but not seriously. You know, like he was a Chicago Blackhawk for 15 years. And when his career ended, I didn't expect it to ever occur, because I thought he was done playing. It all just kind of, I've known John for a long time, and we got to know each other. We went to Humboldt together a few years ago after that, that tragedy. And I got to know him, got to see him, you know, what he was all about, there. And then we just, I think, you know, we kind of stayed in touch over the years, and it was more just inquiring about his well-being, that, 'cause I thought he was done playing. And, but a year ago, last July, I actually got to spend some time with him, and he had gone to India and had finally had some success with his health. He finally felt better. But even then, last year, I didn't envision he was coming back to play. It wasn't until probably, I guess, around December or so when we talked, and he felt like he had been again. He went back for a second time and said he was feeling a lot better and wanted to try skating. And then it just kind of went from there. You know, that's when I would probably the first time that I actually even imagined it happening would have been, I don't know, February or so. He went to skate in Arizona with ASU, and we kind of stayed in touch, and he just seemed to be getting progressively better.
So do you go to Chevy with that, or does, and Chevy knows him obviously from the Chicago days, does he come to you? How does that conversation start between?
It's a good question, because I wasn't sure how, you know, the way it was unfolding, I wasn't quite sure how to, how to bring it up, or, and again, I wasn't sure whether or not it was real. And anyways, I think what happened, Darren, was people found out that he was skating, and that just became known. And then, so some of our guys, you know, knowing that I know him, were inquiring, like, is he serious? Is this really a possibility? And Chevy and I had talked about it, but, you know, I would let Chevy know that I was talking to him, but not within the context of, hey, I think he's going to play for us someday. It was just, you know, by the way, because they know each other very well from their days in Chicago. And it was more just giving him an update, you know, saying, hey, Jonathan's skating, or whatever it was. But again, I it wasn't until probably, I don't know, maybe February, March, somewhere in there, where, you know, he indicated that he was feeling really good and you know, was envisioning taking another stab at playing. And then it just, one thing kind of led to the other after that.
You know, we've seen in the last 3 years, your team really have a culture change, and players have taken ownership of the club in such a positive manner. Adam Lowry, I think Mark has changed a little bit as well. Josh Morrissey, even Connor Hellebuck. Do you run the risk with a guy like Jonathan Toews of challenging that culture that you've created?
I don't think so at all. I think it's quite the opposite. I mean, I know Arnie raised it with all of our guys during their exit meetings, you know, to get a sense of how they would feel about it. And they are, I mean, to a man, they were, I think, really encouraged by the idea, or excited by the idea. And, you know, I encouraged Jonathan to speak to Adam over the summer, and they did. And I mean, they're a lot alike in many respects. And I didn't see him as a threat at all. He's Jonathan Toews. He's, you know, he is what he is, and mm-hmm. and we are what we are. And I think we're, I think there's a lot of common ground there. And I, like, our guys just want to win, right? This group's been together for a long time. We've been very fortunate to keep this group together. You know, we, our amateur group did a, I think, a really good job of drafting in our first half a dozen years. And we've been able to build off that core. And they just, they are, I know this word gets thrown around a lot in our game and our business. You know, we sometimes overuse the word family, or, but that really is what this feels like and has for a long time. These kids grew up there. When you talk about, you know, Adam and Mark and Josh, like, they were young men when they got here. They're men now. They're all, you know, married with kids kind of thing, you know, or that's who we are. And Jonathan is a very mature guy. And I think maybe a younger team might have had a hard time adjusting to a presence like Jonathan, but not this group. They're very, very comfortable with who they are. And so is he.
They've gone from Palomino to the Smitty's Pancake House. That's what they've done.
Well, only you would think it in that term.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Hey,
just, you mentioned Adam. Actually, I mentioned Adam, but you mentioned Adam as well. Just how's his health?
I think it's good. I mean, he's been skating for a while. You know, everybody's taking this very carefully and slowly. And that was a significant surgery he had. And there's no need to rush him back. I mean, like, we've got a good club, and, you know, he's obviously a huge part of it. But I think the thinking right from the get-go is, let's take whatever time we need to get him healthy, because he's a massive part of this.
When you talk about family, Mark, would you suggest what happened those last couple of days in Dallas with the passing of Mark Scheifele's father as another galvanizing moment of the family?
I would say so. Like, I was,
I mean, that was heartbreaking.
It was heartbreaking, you know, to wake up to that day. But I've never seen anything like it, like the way our group responded that day. And I don't think we could have, I don't know. I think the way we responded, the way Mark responded, was years in the making as well. I think this group is so close, and the way they rallied around him that day, the way our whole organization rallied around him, and Mark's maturity to, you know, to just without hesitation say, I'm playing, was something I will never forget. Like, it was really an extraordinary experience. His courage and the strength of our group to support him was really something.
You didn't win the Dallas series, but you got there. Can you contextualize just getting over the hump, whether it's through Hellebuck or whether it's through your group, getting past St. Louis, and what that can do this year and not having that pressure hanging over them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, that was, first of all, that was the most physical series I've ever watched in my life. It was St. Louis was, and actually, if you look at the numbers, we out-hit them. It didn't feel that way watching it, but there were like 660 hits in that series. It was so physical. I was really proud of our group, the way we weathered that and found a way. I think it would have, I think, you know, this is all process. We've won playoff rounds before. You know, we've won a couple playoff rounds, but I think we really needed to win that one. We did, you know, after two really disappointing, first rounds the 2 years prior. And I, you know, I'm not sure, like, our division's so tough. I was disappointed we didn't beat Dallas. I thought we would have. I mean, I think we matched up really well against them, but they got a really good club too. But I think I would venture the guess that we would have grown a big taken a big step by getting through that St. Louis series, especially the way we did, the way we had to come from behind and in a game seven. You know, you, like, we kind of chuckle now about, like, what if we hadn't pulled that off, you know, what would we be dealing with right now? Right.
And the narrative would be totally different, wouldn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think it would have been, yeah, you know, you had another great seat regular season, but you couldn't get through the first round. So I think it's like playoff hockey, as you guys know, is a whole different animal, and anybody can beat anybody. St. Louis was the best team in the league from the trade deadline on. Like, it wouldn't have been any shame losing to them. They got a really good club, really well coached, great goaltending. They're a very difficult team to beat. So ordinarily it wouldn't have been any shame going down in seven to a team that good. But I think it's huge that we were able to get through it and find a way to win it.
The other big question for your roster is Kyle Connor. Do you have any concerns about extending him?
No, I don't. Kyle's, Kyle's been a Winnipeg Jet for a long time. I expect he will be for a long time. He's one of us. The landscape's changed cap wise over the, now that we finally come off out of that whole COVID, curtailment. And I think people are just finding their way, that teams and players are just trying to reset and find their way and make sure, Chevy likes to say, we just like doing fair deals, and that's what we've tried to achieve. I think I have to believe KC is of the same mindset. We've had a great relationship with him, with his agent. I've known for 29 years, frankly. We go back to my first year in this business in 1996. And so it's, I would characterize it as all of it as being positive. And, it's just a timing thing right now.
I was going to say, there are a pretty good bundle of great players around the NHL going into their last year. And Kyle is one of them. Connor McDavid, Kaprizov is one of them. Jack Eichel's another one. Yeah. Is this a trend, Mark? Because you analyze the NHL more than just your team. Are we going to see this trend more, that big names are going to wait and not be forced or have any urgency to sign before their last year?
I don't know the answer to that, John. I think my sense is each one of these deals has its own story. Mm. I think there is a shifting landscape this year with the cap going up and going up again next year, right? I think that's played into this. That would be one sort of maybe common element, but I think beyond that, every team's got its own roster implications and amount of, that they've got available to them in the cap. And I think these are all one-offs. I don't imagine that those four highly skilled players are, looking at this necessarily as a group or waiting necessarily for one to move. I don't think that's, maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know, but I think these are one-off deals.
Yeah. And you will always spend at the cap?
Yeah, I mean, we have for years now. The CBA works, and the changes that have been made in this last go around, they allow us to spend to the cap. And I wouldn't tell you that there's a direct relationship between winning and doing that, but there is a correlation for sure. And we wouldn't be in this if we weren't trying to win, and if we have the ability to spend to the cap, we spend to the cap.
We've hit the halfway tree with our visit with Mark Chipman. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more.
Oh, I see what you hockey. Did. I see yeah. what you did there with the halfway tree thing. That's good.
100% hockey with Millard and Shannon. For those that don't know, there's a big tree halfway between Winnipeg and Brandon.
It's not halfway. Let's face it. It's not halfway.
And we take pictures and we send it to each other anytime we're back. Those of us that have moved away. Hey, Mark, the salary cap, I think it was roughly $70 million when he came into the league. Did you see it going up this much
I guess business is good when it does go up, but it's grown significantly since you returned.
Yeah, it has. And when we came into the league, Darren, the dollar was at par. You know, so it's changed, obviously, but it's been incremental. And, you know, I think, could I tell you, you know, what I thought it would be where it is now, 15 years or going into our 15th season. I don't know that I can tell you, I wasn't thinking about what it was going to be 15 years down the road. I just anticipated, like everything, you know, things are going to go up, cost of living adjustments. There's an inflationary sort of, trend that's baked into everything we do. So, but you know, the reason we were able to get back in the league is not just because there was a cap, but because, you know, the league shares revenue if we didn't, there would be a lot of teams in this league that couldn't spend to the cap or even survive, frankly. So the economic model that the league and the PA, you know, engineered way back in 04, 05 was the basis upon which we were able to even consider coming back into this league. And it's worked, and it's been tweaked along the way and retweaked. And again, in this last go round, and it continues to work. And I mean, like, we're the smallest market in the league, by far, actually. If the smallest market in the league can spend to the cap and, you know, can win a president's trophy, then that, I think that suggests it's the model works.
So the year before last, late in the season, you did an interview with Chris Johnston of The Athletic and talked about the future of the Jets. I would assume that because of the performance of the team on the ice, things have changed positively in that time.
Yeah, I mean, that all came as a consequence. We got hammered by COVID. We really got hit hard. Our season ticket base for 10 years, we were sold out. And then we had a pretty sharp decline in season ticket revenue. And so what I was trying to convey is, in order for us to be competitive, like if we really want to be a cap team, if our fans expect us to do everything we can to win, we need people in the building. That's really all I was trying to, you know, convey. And I think Chris, that interview allowed me to clarify. I think people, there's a sensitivity in this town for good at obvious reasons that, you know, people can get pretty worked up quickly if they think, you know, there's something, you know, imminently, you know, wrong with the economics. Like I just said, like the economics of this league work. We do need people to come to games like everybody does. And so those numbers have really improved for us. Our season ticket base is up significantly since that interview. We still got, you know, we can still improve and do more, but we've made some material gains.
Tell you what, I mean, as you know, I do some work for CGOB, and I get very frustrated for you when I don't see as many sellouts as I think there should be. Yeah. How do you manage that expectation?
You know, it's a kind of a no-win situation, John. Like I guess I'm maybe a little overly cautious about what I say about it. I don't, you know, again, because if I don't want to appear to be, you know, expressing concern or complaining about it, you know, our approach to it is just put our head down, do the best we can, in the community, do all the things that we do, to the best of our ability in the community, and try and win as many hockey games as we can. That's all I can control.
Jets 2.0 under your tutelage is creeping up on equaling the amount of time that the first iteration of the Jets have been around. I was kind of caught off guard when I was doing some research for our conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple more years and we'll be, I think they were 17 years, right?
Right.
Yeah, and we're entering our 15th, so we're getting there.
Yeah. Hey, so, and what many people that will listen to this don't know is that you have a place on Gary Bettman's executive committee. You're in the kitchen cabinet, if you want to put it that way. What have you learned in your time in that inner circle since taking over this hockey club?
Well, first of all, I mean, I was really honored, you know, to be able to join the executive committee several years ago. I've learned a great deal about how, you know, not just our league, but how leagues operate and how important it is to continue to grow the game, right? Like to and hockey's had, you know, has come from sort of a distant fourth from a North American landscape, and it's made some really significant gains. And I think the responsibility of that executive committee is, you know, is to support the work of Gary and Bill. But and to me, that the underlying sort of raison d'etre of what we do is, how do you grow the game? How do you get more people to understand how good this game is? You know, and I think a great example of that was that Four Nations event that we held this year. You know, there were questions about whether or not that made sense at that time. I don't think you could have scripted a better outcome than what we had, especially being Canadian. I think that's what we're supposed to be doing is making this game better understood. And I mean, obviously you got the rest of the stuff, the whole sort of, you know, the responsibility for the, you know, the financial well-being and all of those things fall to the executive committee or to the, you know, to our finance committee, et cetera. But I think that's what I've learned, is that's what our responsibility is. And I've learned, obviously, there's a lot of very smart people around that table that I've been able to learn from just in terms of how they operate their teams. And, you know, it's a good group of people that are really concerned about the well-being of the league.
So do you think there's a different list of requirements to own a team in Canada versus the United States? Or when you sit with that group, there's 10 of you plus the guys from New York, do you end up saying, yeah, we have the same issue, or is there a difference in the issues that you have in Winnipeg versus, say, the guys in Raleigh or St. Louis or Columbus have?
No, I don't think that the differences or similarities would be Canadian versus U.S. I think we've got a lot more in common with Ottawa or you know, a smaller U.S. market. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Leafs are the Leafs, right? Montreal, the Habs, these are, they would have more in common with the New York Rangers and the Boston Bruins in terms of their heritage, their revenue generation, et cetera, right? And yep. Media scrutiny and on and on and on. So I don't, it's not a Canada US thing. It's more of a, if you look at our league, I look at it in kind of in thirds, right? Like there's, and we're a middle class. I think of ourselves as being sort of a middle class organization in terms of our ability to generate, you know, the necessary revenues. That's kind of how I see it. And so there, I mean, the executive committee is, actually has four Canadian teams on it, right? And mm-hmm. And that's great. And maybe that's more, I don't know why that is, but that wouldn't be, if I'm thinking about it, it would be pretty reflective of the amount of revenue that's generated too, league-wide. I'm guessing that, and I'm just guessing here, you know, that the seven Canadian teams would be certainly north of 30% of the overall league revenues, I'm guessing. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We started this conversation talking about expectations. Everybody wants to win, and your goal is to win. But with 32 teams now, and maybe more, do you have to massage what a good season is now compared to what we maybe thought of 20 years ago?
I don't know that you can massage it, Darren. I think it is what it is. Like, I think first and foremost, it's you got to make the playoffs. Like that, that's number one that determines, gives you a chance to say that you've had a good season, right? If you don't make the playoffs, you can't really claim that you had a good season. And then the more you make the playoffs, the higher the expectation is. So for us, it's like 7 out of the last 8 years, right? Mm-hmm. And in a couple of those scenarios, we got past the first or second round, and in several we didn't. And so it's not enough just to say, well, we beat half the, or, you know, we eliminated 8 teams in the West and made the playoffs. That you can't really lay claim to success with that anymore. It feels like now it's playoff wins that are ultimately determined. I mean, you look at the Oilers, right? Like 2 back-to-back trips to the Stanley Cup Finals. That's really hard to do.
Like that should be great.
That should be great. Yeah. That is great. Like by any standard, like that's exceptional. That's so hard to do. And you know, I don't know how you could say that isn't successful, right? So I don't think you can massage it, man. I think success is what you determine it to be, and not so much what people try to project on you. For us, you know, the minimum is for us is to make the playoffs. That's our, call it our, you know, our baseline.
Speaking of the Oilers,
that's hard to do, especially in the Central Division.
Yeah. Speaking of the Oilers, you know, the season's going to go to 84 games next year.
Yeah.
Those extra 2 games have to be against Canadian teams. Help you?
Well, I think what it does is it balances it out for us, right? We get to play in our conference a couple more times, and it balances it out where we kind of flip-flop back and forth.
Right.
I mean, I wish we played Edmonton a lot more. I just do. I long for those Smythe Division days, you know? I mean, those rivalries back in the day against Calgary and Van and Edmonton were really intense. We've got some good rivalries in the Central, right? With Minnie and Colorado and St. Louis and so on. And it's good, but I personally wish we played the Leafs more. I wish we played the Habs more. I wish we played the Oilers more and so on. I just do.
You know, the advantage you have playing the Central is most of the teams are in the same time zone. So you're not playing a lot of late games.
If you
play Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton, you're playing later.
Well, we do in the playoffs anyways. The Central is the worst division to be in for the playoffs because
we know it's terrible.
Like 9 o'clock starts, right?
Let's be honest. The league says 8:30 and then they push it to 8:52. So that's okay.
you're bang on. And it is what it is, right? It just is what it is. We are very much a creation of television, and that's an enormous, an important source of revenue for the entire league. So, it's Central. We do a lot of traveling. We do a lot of flying. We don't sleep in our own beds many nights, you know, like those guys out east.
How often do you on the road?
Not much, maybe a couple, 3 times a year, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not really time well spent for me. Playoffs, I go out on the road. I like to go to playoff games but maybe a couple, 3 times a year.
So before we let you go, what's filling your days these days?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, I'm still day to day with this, right? This is my day job, and I'm really grateful. Really feel very grateful I get to do this. I spend a lot of time on stuff in our community by choice. You know, Winnipeg is like other cities. We've got lots of uphill struggle here, you know, and just in terms of socioeconomic challenges that we face and around our downtown. So I spend a lot of time on that stuff, John. I enjoy doing that kind of work. So I would say it's kind of a 50-50 split between trying to navigate, you know, the NHL and the future of our city.
We graduated from the Highlander over to the Hockey for All Center. You still skating at all? You still twirling?
No. And you know what, Darren?
Why not?
The game is better for it. The game of hockey is better off. I had a really nasty injury a few years ago, and it was the universe telling me it was time. And I can tell you, like, I miss the beer in the locker room and my buddies, but the game doesn't miss me at all. It really doesn't.
Great catching up with you, my friend. Always fun bouncing things around with Mark Chipman, the owner of the Winnipeg Jets. Be good and good luck this season.
Thanks very much, guys. Great seeing you both.
Thanks for your candor, Mark. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys.
I don't blame Mark, and maybe this is because I'm from there, but look, a little bit, a morsel can turn into a big thing in a huge hurry in Manitoba, in Winnipeg.
You're talking about him dodging the question I asked him?
He walked the line. Yeah, and
no, he did. But here's the thing. I think he learned the lesson from that article that got written. And remember, part and parcel of that was Gary Bettman arriving 10 days later. Mm-hmm. And where Mark was saying, you know, we have to be concerned with, you know, we need commitment from the community. And then Gary came to town and said, yeah, we don't have a problem here. So there are certain ways to manage the situation. And I think that was a learning curve for Mark in that sense, because there's no way the Jets are going anywhere. And the Jets are, you know, particular if they continue to win. By the way, the biggest challenge for the Jets is, and you guys touched on it, is that this is a team that had 116 points last year, 56 wins, number one power play, had the, you know, the Hart Trophy winner, the Vezina Trophy winner. There's a good chance that all five of those things may not happen in Winnipeg this year, and they may be better. And so that's the real challenge for the regular season in Winnipeg, is how to maintain expectation and then maintain performance. They may be a better team this year than last year without the points and without the statistical successes.
Who's Canada's best Stanley Cup hope?
Oh, the Edmonton Oilers.
Why?
97 and 29. Nothing's changed. Matthias Ekholm's going to be healthy again. You know, Darnell Nurse.
I'm going to follow him, Ekholm, a little bit, because he's right on that age of being challenged to maintain.
You know what? He's younger than a few good defensemen in this league. Matthias Ekholm is a factor for the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, he is. He's a great player.
Great player.
But there was some wobbles in the playoffs.
Well, because he wasn't 100%.
And we gotta see other guys have to improve and be more consistent there.
So, yeah, now you had something. You were going to ask me something.
ACC in the United States.
The Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah. Their football, they've video review, and they let the television audience listen in. It's transparent.
Not going to happen.
What do you think, when the chances are that the National Hockey League would ever consider that, even on like a national game basis, not every game, but just on those games? And what could, if no is the answer, what could get us there? Because I think fans would just devour that, and it would make it so much easier to understand some of these decisions that are made.
Well, no is the answer. In fact, I don't know if you recall, but in a couple of years of the Memorial Cup, they had access to the intercom.
I was there for that.
In fact, NHL people were part of the process. It got shut down quite quickly at that point by the NHL. I understand why it would be attractive. I might be convinced that it would be good. I just know the people involved that says we don't want people to look that closely behind the curtain. And, you know, there, those decisions have to be made. The conversations might actually have to be cleaned up in that scenario. And
it's okay. We can all do that.
No, no.
We talk differently off air as we do on air. We, our bluntness.
Yeah, but
our bluntness.
But you know, in theory, we're paid professionals to talk, in theory. The people that are involved in these discussions aren't paid professionals to talk. They're professionals to make decisions. And I don't think you want to compromise getting the answer right for the people that are saying, well, we want to hear it.
Well, I challenge you to watch a couple of these football games.
I've seen it.
It's really good.
Well, and you know darn well, I suspect that we're going to get pressure from the networks, particularly in the United States, to try to sell that. And we'll have to see what the commissioner and Bill Daly and Colin Campbell think of all that.
Okay, within 5 years, do you think it happens that we see either a sample of it or they try it on a more regular basis?
5 years?
Yes, we do.
Yes, you do.
Okay,
yes,
so good. That's positive. 5 years.
That's as positive as I'm going to get.
Is a lifetime, but if others are doing it and you see how it can work for your league, I think there's a real positive spin to it for fans to be able to. Not all fans know the rules. At like you who have been in the Situation Room, I've been in the Situation Room. Having that transparency would be, I think, a huge plus for the National Hockey League. Just wanted to run that by you.
Duly noted.
I'll send you a picture of the halfway through. I'll also post it on Instagram, just so everybody knows what we're talking about.
So like, but it's the 5/8 street.
It's more 60, 40, more 55, 45. My buddy's going to be mad at me about this, but it's there. And it's a beautiful tree.
Beautiful. I've seen it. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's not in between the two. It's all over on the, anyway, have a good weekend, my friend.
What are you talking about?
Well, cause there's like an imposter. The halfway tree.
Oh my God.
And you got to know what you're talking about.
Now there's imposters for the halfway. Yeah.
What are you going to do this weekend?
I don't know. The weather's so nice. I just might work in the garden all weekend.
We play Sunday in San Jose.
I have to do a little radio on Sunday afternoon. So
we play. So can't wait.
Are you on television that day?
We are.
Wow.
We are.
I'll have to watch.
First road game of the year after 3 days of training camp, and it's going to be awesome. Let's go. Giddy up and go. We'll talk to you next time on 100% Hockey. Please share this with all your friends. If you're a Jets fan, let everybody know about it and send us a like and let everybody know so we can expose this podcast and these conversations to as many people as possible. Have a good time. On behalf of 100% Hockey, I'm Darren Millard. Be good.